Welcome to episode number 22 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. Today, we are going to go over brachial plexus injuries, new news and new plans, and pituitary disorders.
Okay, today on The Art of Med School, we're going to talk about... I totally lost my place. Okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about brachial plexus injuries. So, as we've discussed before, the brachial plexus is coming off of C5 through T1, and it's all these nerves that come out at those vertebral levels and then come together, and they kind of make a web, and then you get your, like, radial artery and your axillary artery, median, muscular cutaneous, all those. We talked about palsies before. This time we're going to talk more about, like, injuries. So, look more like the kind of the presentation and stuff like that. The first one that is actually pretty common, if you're a med student, make sure to pay attention because these are all fairly high, considered high yield. The first one is wing scapula. So what it usually looks like is when someone pushes against a wall or a closed door, their scapula actually flares out and it's like their scapula is pointing behind them, kind of like a wing. And that is because of the serratus anterior. So, serratus anterior's job is to hold the scapula close to the body. And when it's not working, it allows that scapula to flare out like that. That serratus anterior is innervated by the long thoracic nerve. Long thoracic nerve comes from C5 to C7. So, the mnemonic that we use in med school is C5, 6, 7, wings to heaven. Now, in a question or, you know, in real life or whatever, you're commonly going to see this presented as, a stab wound or radical mastectomy. Because when it comes off, when that long thoracic nerve comes off the brachial plexus, it goes right along kind of that armpit area. So, wing scapula, 5, 6, 7, long thoracic nerve. The next one, I think this one is really funny. It's called the Saturday Night Palsy. And it actually comes up a lot in question banks. So the scenario is someone presents with wrist drop, like they can't lift their wrist. So if you're not a med person, hold your hand, hold your arm out, palm down, and then just let it droop. So that's wrist drop. So being unable to lift it from that position. And the muscles that are supposed to do that are all on, for us, the posterior, on the backside of your arm, and the forearm. Those are all your extensor muscles. Those are all done by the radial nerve. So the radial nerve is essentially responsible for the extensors of the arm and the forearm both, so triceps and everything like that too. So what happens is in the story or the vignette that you're given, someone passes out. Usually because they've been drinking. And they pass out with their arms over the back of a chair, hanging off a couch, balcony rail, something like that. And that compresses that radial nerve, and when they wake up in the morning, they have that numbness and tingling and unable to extend their arm. And so people often present with complaints of like potential stroke or MI because of all that arm funkiness that's going on. This can also be associated with poor use of crutches. So if your crutches aren't fitted well and they compress in the wrong area, you can have Saturday Night Palsy with it as well. Next one is ape hand. So the median nerve does pronation of the forearm in opposition of the thumb. So pronation, when you're holding, so if you stick your arm straight out in front of you, pretend you're holding a bowl of soup, that's supination. Tip that bowl of soup, empty it out, turn your hand over. That's pronation. So median nerve does pronation of the forearm and opposition of the thumb. Opposition of the thumb is kind of like, opposition is what allows you to put your thumb and your fingers together. So it essentially flexes the wrist as well. So it does those things, and it flexes the wrist as well. It also flexes the lateral two interphalangeal joints and the medial two interphalangeal joints. So the interphalangeal would be between the phalanges. So it's like that first knuckle there. So the ape hand then is, think of how like an ape holds its hand with the thumb kind of pulled back, and then that interphalangeal joint, those pulled. So it's kind of making a claw, but it looks kind of like an ape hand. And this is due to damage to the median nerve. And that damage often comes by a supracondylar fracture. So a fracture of the humerus, the upper arm bone, but very, very close to the elbow, just above where your elbow joints are for those little nubs that stick out on either side. That's the supracondyle. Well, actually, that's the epicondyles. Above there would be the supracondyle area. So a supracondylar fracture is right above, essentially, your elbow. So of the humerus, supracondylar fracture of the humerus. This can also happen, compression of the carpal tunnel syndrome. Usually you don't see median or ape hand like this as much with carpal tunnel, just because from what I understand, it doesn't seem to usually reach this degree of significance with carpal tunnel syndrome. Usually it's caught beforehand. This also produces, for the med students looking for vignette hints, this also produces a characteristic flattening of the thenar eminence. So you make all that stuff. But because the thenar eminence is basically the bump of muscles right below your thumb, you can think of it as kind of like the meat of your thumb. But when those muscles don't receive innervation anymore, they start to atrophy. And atrophy just means that they kind of waste away to nothing, essentially. But when that happens, then that bump, all those muscles there, flatten out. So the last one is claw hand. So we did long thoracic, we've done radial, we've done median. Claw hand now is the ulnar nerve. Now the ulnar nerve does essentially everything for the fourth and fifth fingers. Also does the palmar and dorsal interossei muscles. Those are the muscles in your hand that allows your fingers to abduct and adduct. For the non-medical, abduct would be to spread your fingers, adduct would be to put them together. So those interossei muscles do that, and that's controlled by your ulnar nerve. So the ulnar nerve can be damaged by a fracture of the medial epicondyle. So if you're on the inside of your arm, that bump, that's the medial epicondyle. And that's called golfer's elbow, actually, when you have epicondylitis of the medial epicondylitis. Kind of a good one to remember. So what happens is you have the loss of abduction, adduction of the fingers, and flexion of the metacarpophalangeal joints. So the ones between the metacarpals and the phalangeals. That's the very first set of knuckles that you have. It produced wasting of the hyperthenar eminence. We talked about what wasting and thenar eminence is. Hypothenar just means your pinky finger. So thenar is your thumb. Hypothenar is your pinky. The hypothenar eminence is essentially that kind of meaty area on the opposite side of where it's meaty for your thumb. A little bump of muscles down there. So again, because they're not getting innervation, they start to waste away. Fourth and fifth fingers are hyperextended at the metacarpophalangeal joint and flexed at the interphalangeal joint. So sometimes it's called the hand of benediction, because if what we're talking about as far as trying to set this up, picture when like a pope would go by or a bishop and he would go to bless you, how he's got the two fingers up and then the pinky and the ring finger down. That's the shape that we're making. And that's because of the muscles that are, I'm going in hyperextended and flexed at I'm going backwards. So the reverse of that. So picture, because that's a whole nother sign. That's a median nerve sign. So picture what I was just saying, but reverse it. So which muscles are in which fingers are in, which fingers are out. So sorry, I kind of screwed that up at the end there. Hopefully that wasn't too confusing. But if you look at pictures of all these, it will also make it make a lot more sense. So important brachial plexus injuries to know: wing scapula, Saturday night palsy, ape hand, and the claw hand.
make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right, so this might be breaking news for some of you. We have told some people, but surprise, I am pregnant. And here's the thing. I didn't know before I decided to come back to work for the summer. We even got pregnant on purpose, and we had planned it and everything. And not gonna lie, it was pretty much the first shot out of the gate after I went off of birth control. So the timeline was super fast. And so we really had to reassess what our plans as a couple were going to look like. And so we had to kind of reshift some thoughts and some thinking, and the new plan is that I'm going to stay here and make as much money as possible and give birth to this kid. Mike had talked to some of his instructors, and they were saying, you know, she's 34, which is very close to what they say in the U.S. is a geriatric OB patient, which is terrible. But being slightly older, not quite advanced maternal age, but being slightly older, they really thought, and the level of healthcare that I can get back in the U.S., his instructors really strongly suggested that I stay here for the medical care that I can get. So far, everything's been super chill, and I've had no problems at all. Super normal things like heartburn. But, so the plan is that I'm going to stay in South Dakota, and he's going to stay in school. And suddenly, all of these really kind of boring embryology podcasts that we put out are suddenly less boring for me. But I have been super blessed with a lot of opportunities that have come up. I was offered an awesome job with the Black Hills Playhouse, which is where I was at over the summer. And I can work remotely for them full time and after the season, and I picked up some freelance directing gigs at some local universities here in eastern South Dakota. And it's true, the separation is lasting a lot longer than either of us want, and that sucks. But there are some things that are making this time and the separation a lot easier, because it's not ideal. I don't want to be 3,500 miles away from my spouse while I am going through this process for the first time. But, in the long run, it really is the right choices that we're making. But here's the thing that's making everything a lot easier. I am living with his parents. Okay, no, I totally get it. It sounds super lame. I'm 34, pregnant, and living in my in-laws' basement, but it's super awesome. I am blessed to have awesome in-laws, and they have a really great house, and I have a lot of autonomy, and they're super fun people to live with. And there's something about being here that makes me feel like I am closer to him in some way that I wouldn't get if I were staying at my own parents' house. And that's another benefit, is that my own parents are only about an hour away. So come with the birth of this child, come January, I've got a lot of super awesome childcare opportunities that are suddenly going to be able to be arisen. So that's going to be awesome too. And, and I'm finally back doing things that I really love. And I just wasn't finding those opportunities there, which is unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that we have to be apart for so long, but we're making it work and we're big kids. And every so often you got to make some tough choices in life to make things work, you know? So that's what I know today. That's our big news. We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on Patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
All right, next, let's talk about the pituitary gland. Now, if you remember, we talked about the pituitary gland a couple of episodes ago and all the different things that it makes and all the different hormones and that it stimulates. Like, there's just so much. So this time, we're going to talk about pituitary disorders. If you haven't listened to, or if you're not familiar with pituitary gland, it's probably really good to go back and listen to that one. So the first pituitary disorder we're going to talk about is panhypopituitarism. So, like most things medical, you break apart the word, it sounds really fancy, right? Panhypopituitarism. It's not fancy. It's just pituitarism, right? That's the base. Hypopituitarism. So hypo means low, and pan means everything. So panhypopituitarism. What happens is that we're not releasing like any hormones, right? Of all kinds. So because pan means everything, like think pandemic or panacea. So what happens is there's damage to the arterial supply leading to the pituitary gland, and that causes necrosis and death. So the pituitary gland is getting necrosis and it's dying, and then it can't release the hormones. Another important one to know is neurogenic diabetes insipidus. So I think most people are pretty familiar with diabetes. There's more than one type, though, not talking just type 1 and type 2. Diabetes insipidus is really due to polyuria. So polyuria is too much urine. And neurogenic, what's happening is there neurogenic diabetes insipidus, our ADH, which are like our vasopressor, our natural hormone that we release to help with our, like, control our blood pressure, is reduced or absent. So we're constantly telling our body to pee off excess urine when really we don't have it. So ADH would inhibit how much urine we create, and that's just not happening. So it's caused by, like, head injury, invasive tumor, or it's possible it's autoimmune, that we make immune antibodies that cause the destruction of the vasopressin secreting neurons. So with that polyuria, we can pee up to 20 liters in 24 hours. That's a ton of fluid going out the door when we need that fluid. So now converse to neurogenic diabetes insipidus. Remember, that's reduced ADH or absent ADH. There's nephrogenic diabetes insipidus. And what that is, it's a chronic renal disease. So we have the ADH, we're releasing it, it's trying to do its job, but there's something wrong with the ADH receptors in the kidney. So all of a sudden they're non-responsive to that vasopressin. And it could be like result of genetic defects or something like that. So it presents exactly the same as neurogenic diabetes insipidus. The only difference is our ADH levels. So neurogenic diabetes insipidus, we don't have any ADH. Nephrogenic, we do, but it's not able to do its job. Next, we have Sheehan syndrome, which is a postpartum hypopituitarism. It's caused by blood loss, so postpartum means, obviously, I think most people know, after birth. It's caused by blood loss and hypovolemic shock, so not having enough blood. Shock caused by not having enough blood during and after childbirth. And what happens is, because we're low of blood, whether it's from the blood loss or you know, whatever is going on, we're again losing blood supply to the pituitary gland. And specifically what we see more often is necrosis of the adenal hypophysis. So the adenal hypophysis is the anterior part, the part on the front, that as opposed to the neural hypophysis. So the result is a permanent underproduction of pituitary hormones, because that adenal hypophysis, that anterior part of the pituitary gland, that's dead. And once it's dead, it's not coming back. Now, at least I can say this is pretty rare in industrialized nations, so probably don't have to worry about that. As far as it happening to you, I feel like if you're listening to a podcast, and you're going to give birth, you're probably giving birth in an industrialized nation. All right. So the most common disease, as far as disorders of pituitary gland, is pituitary adenoma. So pituitary adenomas are benign, and that means they usually don't invade adjacent tissue. That doesn't mean that they're not serious, because they could still have fatal consequences. It's just when we talk benign and malignant, it's about whether or not it's likely to invade next-door neighbors and make everything just go way worse. So a pituitary adenoma, it depending on what cell type it is, so cancer, at least this kind of cancer that we're talking about, is essentially uncontrolled, unregulated cell growth. And so if you are growing so if that cancer happens in the part that releases, say, ADH, just because we were talking about it earlier, it's going to create a bunch of cells that release ADH. And so what you're going to have is too much ADH. So you have this continuous production of whatever hormone, like we said, ADH for this example, but it could be whatever kind, and that's uncontrolled by any kind of feedback mechanism. So your body doesn't have a way to regulate that. So you just get this constant flow of this hormone, or whatever hormone. The effect of the tumor, like I said, depends on where it is or what tissue it's made out of. Tumor of corticotrophs make excess ACTH, which, what is that, adrenocorticotrophic hormone? Something like that. ACTH, we always just say ACTH. So ACTH stimulates the adrenal glands to produce large quantities of corticosteroid, so like a bunch of cortisol, and then you get what's called Cushing's disease. A tumor of somatotrophs produces excess growth hormone. When you talk about like kids having gigantism, that's excess growth hormone. And that can actually happen in adults too, and that's called acromegaly. It's not that they grow a ton and all of a sudden they're like super tall and giants, but they do have coarse facial features over, like their hands actually do grow, their foreheads get very prominent. Sometimes it's not a hormone-producing tissue when you have a pituitary adenoma, but they can still overgrow, and then they grow upwards and out of the silica turcica, which is where the pituitary gland sits, and where that sits is actually right below the optic chiasma, which is where the optic nerves from each eye cross. And so you compress that optic chiasma, and you restrict the visual fields that you can see. So that's some pituitary disorders. I hope that all made sense. There's definitely more for you to look up and to learn. But we'll leave it there for now.
All right, there you have it. That was episode number 22 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. And we went over brachial plexus injuries, our new news and our new plans, as well as pituitary disorders. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.